Hello, it's Mike Morin, and this is Reset, 40 is the New Happy, a podcast interview series that celebrates reinventions later in life. Even though Dan Cesney's working career has always centered around writing, it's his ever-changing personal reinventions that makes him an inspiring subject. He's written books, co-founded the state's largest arts and entertainment newspaper, and speaks frequently about what makes him happiest, his wife, year-old daughter, exploring the world with a backpack, and oh yes, writing. Today's episode is more about personal growth and new paths than career changes. So Dan, being over 40, I sense this has truly been the new happy for you personally at past that age.
Oh yeah, absolutely, Mike. And by the way, thanks for sitting down and chatting with me. You know I'm always thrilled to sit across the table from you and talk turkey, and with Thanksgiving right around the corner. Reinvention. Sometimes it feels like I've been reinventing myself for my entire life, you know. And once the baby arrived, it oftentimes, you know, when you have a family, one path that you can take is the conservative path, right? And to be careful and to not take chances. But for some reason, when Uma came into our lives, into my life, the exact opposite seemed to happen, and I became more inspired and more determined to reinvent myself and to live a happy life. And it's not easy; it's challenging, and there's still bills to be paid. But I have to someday look her in the eye, and she's going to ask me what I was doing during these years, and I have to be able to tell her that I was working for her, but working for her in a way that made me and us and our family happy and was fulfilling. So that's what we're trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do.
And thank you for your kind words early on there. All right, so you moved here from Buffalo, your hometown, to write for the Union Leader. How did you connect with fellow Hippo Press founders Jody Rees and Jeff Rapsis?
Yeah, well, I actually came to New Hampshire from Buffalo via Philadelphia and New Jersey. And I was in New Jersey, I was a political reporter in New Jersey, working for a bunch of papers down there. And I had the opportunity to come up here in 1999 and do some work for the Union Leader and for the Associated Press covering the presidential primary, the George Bush, Al Gore primary. And as a political reporter, you know, that's the big leagues. You know, you go where the big political reporting is. So I was just thrilled to come up. And as it turned out, I fell in love with New Hampshire, and I fell out of love with political reporting. Because I hated it. And it was such an ugly, terrible primary, and it was so shallow, and in my opinion, continues to be, on a presidential politics level. And I didn't want anything to do with it. So when that election ended, and I had the opportunity to continue to South Carolina for the primary there, I said, no, I'm done. I'm done with this. But I had nothing, you know, other than the mountains in New Hampshire. I was living in Derry at the time. I became a correspondent for the Union Leader. I was covering Londonderry primarily, a little bit of Derry. And Jody was also, at the same time, was a correspondent covering Hudson, which is the town right next door. And Jeff at the time was involved with the Union Leader's little papers, the I forgot what they're called, but they have a bunch of little weeklies. And so Jody and I would get together, a lot of us correspondents actually would get together all the time and just, you know, commiserate and drink and have coffee and, you know, just because we didn't work at the paper. So in order to get sort of that social life, we would just get together. And we were commiserating about how this area, you know, I came from Philadelphia and from New Jersey, and there's those weekly arts and entertainment papers all over the place. And, Jody worked in Montreal and even in Kentucky, and they have places, newspapers like that. And New Hampshire had nothing like that at all. A Manchester area of 250,000 people with no weekly arts and entertainment. It was one of the few places in the country that didn't have that. So while we were still at the Union Leader, we started the paper online. It was an online publication first, and this was back in the days of when online was, you know, just a baby. And in very short order, we discovered that there were a lot of writers who were interested in that sort of paper. We developed a corral of writers very quickly, and not just a corral of writers, but a corral of advertisers and businesses who would have been interested in that if it were a newspaper. So we started as an online publication while we were still working at the Union Leader, and within about 8 or 9 months, we put out our first paper edition. And that's how it all came about. And then we brought Jeff on board a little bit later when he found out about us.
All right, so you come to New Hampshire, and you know nothing about hiking, really. But you are assigned, I think, at the Union Leader to cover a story about somebody who's doing an Alaska hike. And that sort of was your portal into what is now one of your big passions in life.
Yeah, his name is Jim Gagney. He's still a friend of mine. He's my mentor, actually. He's the only New Hampshire-born climber to summit Mount Everest. There are several New Hampshire residents who've summited Mount, but he's the only New Hampshire native. And so he was climbing Mount McKinley, or now Mount Denali, and I thought that would be a great story. I knew nothing about hiking or climbing. I'm from, you know, it's from New Jersey. There's the New Jersey shore is where you hike, you know. But I called him up, and he said, yeah, I'm going on this trip, and when I come back, I did the story, but when I come back, you know, if you want to do some hiking around New Hampshire, give me a call, and I'll take you out to do some hiking. And I thought, yeah, sure. I didn't have any friends. I didn't know what real hiking was or climbing. So when he came back, he called me, and he said, hey, I'm going to hike this mountain called Cannon Mountain, and you want to come? And I said yes, without having any clue what I was getting into. And not only did we hike Cannon Mountain, but he took me up the caretaker's route. This is when the old man in the mountain was still up there, and he knew the people who took care of the old man in the mountain. And it was a hand over foot, you know, with wires scaling up the side of the rock. And that was my first climbing experience. And halfway up, I puked. I'm not ashamed to admit. I was so exhausted and terrified, you know, because I'd never done anything like this before. But when I got to the top, finally, with his help, and I stepped out onto what was then the old man's forehead and looked down that notch, looked down Franconia Notch, I knew instantly this was what I was going to be doing for the rest of my life, in one form or another, whether writing about it or doing it or both or whatever. And I got to tell you, when I got home that day, I was so sore I couldn't get out of bed for a week. And I called him the next morning and I said, Jim, you have to come and make me lunch because I can't get to the fridge. I can barely move my arm to call you. And he just laughed at me. And he said, you know, when do you want to do it again? So
another major reinvention is that you married a woman whose family and roots is from a part of the world that has the largest mountain on the planet, of course, Mount Everest.
Funny how that works, right?
Yeah, that's really odd. So the reinventions are all tied together. So Mina, your now wife of 5 years, you also met her because of your work as a writer.
Yeah, early on at the Hippo, we had a small office right above what was then the Black Brimmer. If you recall the Black Brimmer on Elm Street, I think it's, I'm not sure what it is now. Next, right around the corner from the Red Arrow, and I was the editor at the time. And we, you know, there was only three of us, and it was one of those. It was like almost a college situation. You know, we were living in the office, and we were working 80 hours a week, and we were doing everything. And I was editing at the time, so I was constantly looking for stories. So I spent a lot of time at City Hall, which was only about three blocks down the street. And at the time, she was and is a city planner, and she was working as a city planner in Manchester. So, you know, Jody and Jeff, still tease me about the fact that for about a three-month period there, after I met Mina, all that the paper ran were stories about city planning. Because I basically camped out, you know, in the planning department, you know, under the pretense of getting those stories, you know. But it was really just to get to know her. So, yeah, that, which we did. And when it came time eventually for us to get married, you know, we're older. We're both older. You know, we were not kids when we were marrying. So our initial plan was, we've been to Vegas before, and Vegas is cool. Let's go out there, and we'll have a quickie wedding, and it'll be like a fun thing. But her father, my now father-in-law, actually was the one who suggested, would you be interested in going to Nepal, to Kathmandu, and participating in a traditional Nepalese wedding ceremony? And, I thought about, as a writer, I thought about that for all of about a half a second before saying, my gosh, yes, how amazing that will be. And, you know, it turned into one of my books.
The Nepal Chronicles, of course. I mean, there's so much other in between. You and Mina hiked to Mount Everest Base Camp. You did it without the usual local assistance.
Yes.
That's a little risky.
And we did it for our honeymoon, too.
Yeah.
She says I still owe her a beach honeymoon. Yeah. But I know that she would be bored on the beach. we hiked unguided and unportered, which means we carried our own gear, and we mapped our own route at the time. And this is how we've always done it. You know, we hiked, we spent a week in the Grand Canyon, and we hiked the Centennial Trail in the North and South Dakota. We spent a lot of time on the AT. I hiked across England on the Wainwright Trail, my first long through hike. So her and I are pretty used to carrying stuff on our back and doing it on our own, and it had nothing to do with, you know, not trusting the porters or anything like that, but it's just sort of the way that we have always operated, was to be on the trail together on our own, getting it done. And so we decided to do that to Mount Everest Base Camp, which meant that we had a lot of time. So a normal trek to and from Base Camp may take, with a commercial trekking group, may take 8, 9, 10 days. We were there for nearly 3 weeks. So we got to, and we slept in Sherpa homes and at tea houses. So we really got to immerse ourselves in the culture and in the people along the way, which has always been an important part of my writing and my life.
Let's talk now, moving forward, in terms of family planning. At 48... you have your first child,
yes.
The adorable baby you, as you
yes.
call her, who just started walking at 10 and a half months,
yeah.
which is pretty amazing. So,
and terrifying.
Yes. So how many countries does this infant, now toddler, have on her passport already?
Well, she has three countries. Technically three countries, because she was in India and Turkey. And the United States, of course. We took her on a big month-long journey. In fact, we just got back from it 2 weeks ago. For her to meet her great-grandmother, who lives in a town called Ramnagar, India, which is in Bihar, India, a northern part of India, only about 20 miles from the Nepalese border. It required a flight to Chicago, and then from Chicago to Istanbul, and from Istanbul to New Delhi, and then a 15-hour ride on North Indian rail to get to the town, and then another hour ride to the farm where her grandmother lives. And this is with a 10-month-old. So we planned the trip for since she was born, pretty much, and it was an amazing spiritual, emotional journey. And she also has seven states, by the way.
Wow. We haven't talked a whole lot about your writing, but I do want to ask you to talk about your writing reinvention in terms of the Good Men Project. Explain what that is.
Yeah, the Good Men Project is an online magazine, journal, I guess. That is centered on what I would call sort of the sensitive side of it's not a Maxim, it's not a Lad Mag, I think that's Laddie Mag, is that what they call them? But it's about being what it means to be a man in the 21st century, and a father and a husband. In terms of emotional support and income and economics and society and culture. And I write an occasional column called, an older dad, over 40, about what it's like to be an older dad, you know, to be a 48-year-old, now 49, with a one-year-old daughter. I mean, when she becomes a teenager, I'm going to hit retirement. So I try not to think about that too much because it's terrifying. But fortunately, we live in an age where, 60 is the new 40. So So I write a little column for them where I talk about reconnecting with family and what it means to be older and have a small child. And I'm often asked, what is the difference, right? What does it mean to be a 50-year-old dad of a 1-year-old kid? And for me, I think it's easier. You know, I think of myself when I was 20 or 25 years old, I didn't know anything. You know, I was unsettled, and you know how you are when you're 20 years old. You have all these sort of crazy ideas. There's no wisdom or knowledge attached to anything that you're doing. I apologize if I'm offending any 20-year-olds. But now I think I have more patience, you know, and I have a sort of a deeper vat of life experience that I can pull from. It means I get winded more when I'm chasing her around the house. I think it's great that her mother and I are able to give her more life experience, and I hope it'll come out, you know, when she gets a little older.
Final question: for men over 40, what do you suggest to those looking for something more in their lives? Because you've embraced that aspect of the last decade. There must be other men who you can share some inspiration with.
Yeah, first, find a wife who is an absolute angel and martyr.
This is the suck up part of the interview.
Right, and patience, and really pretty, and smells like flowers. I love you, dear. My experience, I'm not a success yet. You know, and I never will be. You know, I think you just keep continuously trying to reinvent yourself and better yourself and keep moving forward and doing what you love and pedaling as hard as you can every single morning. The secret is that I've been doing that my whole life, you know, and I guess that's not a secret, right? You don't just wake up one morning and decide, oh, I'm going to take this leap of faith, you know, that's going to affect my family and it's going to affect the people around me. And I still have, you know, a good solid 30 years of life left in me. So you work for it, toward it, from the very beginning. So, if you're 40 or 42 or 43 and you're miserable, and the first thing to ask yourself is what makes you happy, you know? And once you figure that out, do not go there, because that's the most dangerous thing to do. Take small steps and work your way toward it. The last advice that I want to give anyone is to, you know, I love paragliding, so you know what? Yeah. I'm gonna quit my job in the bank. Hey, family, I'm gonna become a professional paraglider. That's dumb, but figure it out first. And then figure out how to get there. And it may take you a week, and it may take you 10 years or 20 years. It took me 25 years. And I'm not there yet. But I'm getting a little closer every day.
Great stories. Dan Sesney, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much, Mike. It was just a pleasure to be here.